This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 15th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 160. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary. I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to a difference maker, and the big deal feature, highlights from an international webinar on media freedom featuring University of British Columbia journalism professor Peter Klein, and a fission musician. Hear from Iron Maiden guitarist Adrian Smith. Smith's new book, Monsters of River and Rock, includes his adventures on British Columbia rivers. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is it time to repeat the words of the Canadian COVID-19 Accountability Group, the advocates who called for open government and whistleblower protection back in the spring during the first wave of the pandemic? Quote, "The COVID-19 emergency presents the greatest challenge to governments since the Second World War. While it is understood that the need for haste leaves governments little choice but to act swiftly and decisively, the inevitable fraud and profiteering should not be written off as an acceptable cost. Rather, there is an opportunity to empower citizens to participate in the enforcement of accountability in the acceptance and use of government financial supports, scientific evidence, and the administration of health services." End quote. Without transparency, trust and confidence in our public institutions suffers. Without trust and confidence, guess what happens? A greater public health crisis. The second wave is on. The more we know, the better we can react, and the better we can prepare for a third wave. Or maybe we can even prevent a third wave. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, 8 Hong Kong opposition lawmakers officially resigned from office. Britain, the European Union, Canada, and the United States have all criticized mainland Chinese authorities for further curtailing Hong Kong's autonomy. China's top legislature, the National People's Congress Standing Committee, allowed the Hong Kong government to disqualify lawmakers who it believed had failed to pledge allegiance to the city's mini-constitution, the Basic Law. 2 of 4 lawmakers disqualified, Alvin Young and Dennis Kwok, were Canadian citizens before they were elected. In the New Zealand Herald, incredibly disappointed, New Zealand rugby left fuming after RDE Savea continues to neglect mouthguard duties. Savea was spotted without the protective equipment during New Zealand's 24-22 defeat to the Wallabies in Brisbane, less than a month after he was condemned by NZR for not wearing a mouthguard during Bledisloe Cup 2 at Eden Park. In 2013, Savea and a Wellington teammate were sent from the field by a referee to retrieve a mouthguard after they were caught without one during a match against Canterbury. In the LA Times, sunken boats, stolen gear, fishermen are prey as China conquers a strategic sea. Unfazed by rising global criticism, China's Navy, Coast Guard, and paramilitary fleet has rammed fishing boats, harassed oil exploration vessels, held combat drills, and shadowed U.S. naval patrols. The escalating show of force has overwhelmed smaller Southeast Asian states that also claim parts of the sea, one of the world's busiest fishing and trade corridors, and a repository of untapped oil and natural gas. Beijing's maritime expansionism illustrates not only the Chinese Communist Party's growing military might, but also its willingness to defy neighbors and international laws to fulfill President Xi Jinping's sweeping visions of power. China has encircled Taiwan and challenged the Pentagon's ability to move ships into Asia. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, Portland City Commissioner calls 911, refuses to get out of Lyft car after driver cancels ride. The Lyft went bad from the beginning once Portland City Commissioner Joanne Hardesty ordered a pickup at Washington's Alani Casino Resort last week. Hardesty got upset over a mix-up about where she was waiting for the car. Then she didn't want the windows open for ventilation because she was cold. Then she wouldn't get out when the driver cut the ride short and tried to drop her off at a gas station miles from home. Hardesty called for police. She has been the leading voice to defund the police in Portland, site of months of violent protests in 2020. In the Seattle Times, remembering Bruce Lee and his time in Seattle on the 80th anniversary of his birth. He's the focus of a book and a documentary titled Be Water. November 27th is the anniversary of the martial arts hero's birth. Born in San Francisco, raised in Hong Kong, Lee studied at the University of Washington in the early 1960s and appeared on local kung fu TV shows. He died in 1973 at age 32. On Czech News, Nanaimo veteran who survived 1918 flu pandemic celebrates 102nd birthday on Remembrance Day. Victor Osborne has lived through some of the most significant events in history, from the Great Depression to the Second World War. The Spanish flu, as it is commonly called, would go on to claim 50,000 Canadian lives by the time that Osborne was just 2 years old. Osborne is a veteran of the Second World War. This week on the Breaker.News, Surrey politicians flouted pandemic protocols at a party with Indian envoy. And a sweet surprise, I'm nominated with the team at CTV News Vancouver for a Jack Webster Award in the Business, Industry, Labor, and Economics Reporting category. The Webster Awards celebrate the best in British Columbia journalism. The online ceremony is December 8th. CTV's entry is called Economic Catastrophe, BC Business Faces the Pandemic. I collaborated with reporter David Malko on stories about price gouging. Go to jackwebster.com for more information. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Joe Biden is the president-elect, but Donald Trump still won't give up his bid to stay in the White House. It's been a turbulent 4 years, marked by increased attacks on journalists around the world and a rise in disinformation. The University of British Columbia's School of Journalism and Global Reporting Center co-hosted a November 9th webinar with the British High Commission. UBC professor Peter Klein is also head of the Global Reporting Center. Klein is an Emmy Award-winning journalist and longtime producer with 60 Minutes. This is some of what Klein had to say on the webinar.
QAnon is a really good example, and the whole, it's remarkable the kind of level of creep and seep that these conspiracy theories have had in the mainstream. You know, we think of, a lot of people think of this as sort of these fringe movements, but a lot of people, certainly in the United States, feel like if there's smoke, there's fire. Maybe there are child sex rings going on. Maybe there, how can nothing be happening if so much is being talked about it? I think that social media, my school's director, Al Fermita, wrote one of the leading books on this, the impact of social media, really not just kind of taking over the role of journalism, but really seeping into our consciousness. That has had such an impact on these conspiracy theories like QAnon gaining credibility. Those kinds of the algorithms that elevate these conspiracy theories are so powerful, more powerful than mainstream media. So some of these really, many of us, probably all of us on this panel would consider, ridiculous fringe ideas gain more traction than, front page stories in The Guardian or The New York Times on social media. So, I think that we really need to think about how it's difficult because, we don't have necessarily the power to combat these. And just by fact-checking a QAnon claim, that's not enough. Unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for how to combat that because some of those, we think about Russia, these big state actors, but some of the more insidious work is being done at this grassroots level. And, the kind of level of, the door has been open for so many, not just the United States with leadership in other countries as well. But, I'll say in the United States, I've seen the level of anti-Semitic trolling you know, I'm Jewish. I'm the child of Holocaust survivors. If I do anything, I mean, even, and I don't get very political in my social media, but if I write an article or I write an op-ed or something that even mentions anything about Donald Trump, I'm just attacked. And that never happened, you know, 4 years ago. So that there's this, you know, the door has been opened for that hate, whether it's, you know, anti-Muslim hate, misogynism. I mean, you know, it's really, it's a troubling trend that unfortunately I don't have a good answer for. This notion of the journalist being the enemy of the people needs to be wiped out. We are the people, and our job is to support the people. The whole point of journalists is to represent the interests and the needs of the public. You have powerful government forces, you know, good or bad, but they have power. They have militaries. They have, you know, taxation. All of those powers, and they you know, but they're supposed to work for us in democracies. They're supposed to work for the citizens, and journalists are there to represent the citizens. I think we need to get back to that notion. And it's, you know, it's you know, not to sound too critical, but the door has been opened for undermining journalists. And, you know, many politicians, you know, genuinely believe in what they're doing, and they find journalists as impediments to achieving those goals. And, you know, for all the kind of love that many people have for the previous U.S. administration, the Obama administration, they use the Espionage Act more than all other presidents combined in history to go after whistleblowers. I covered the Obama administration. They were, you know, extremely difficult to get information out of under freedom of information. So, you know, you have the continuation of a prominent member of the Obama administration. Are they going to, you know, say maybe a much more subtle way than the current administration, but hey, you know, let's continue undermining journalists because we believe in what we want to do, and we just want to do it, you know, expediently. So, you know, I'm not saying that that's necessarily going to happen, but I think we all need to be vigilant about that. In the United States, in Pakistan and Turkey, in Egypt, all over the world, in Botswana, any part of the world, really any country could use this technique of undermining journalists to try to get what they want to get done. But the, you know, we have to remember that the journalists are not the enemy of the people. We're the friend of the people, and we are the people. And I think we need to get back to that first principle.
That was Peter Klein of the UBC School of Journalism on a November 9th Media Freedom Webinar. London hosted the first global conference on media freedom in 2019. This year's edition is online. It is November 16th and co-hosted by Canada and Botswana. Iron Maiden fans are counting down to the November 20th release of Knights of the Dead, live in Mexico City. The British band's guitarist, Adrian Smith, has just released a book about his fishing adventures. He's a fishing musician. Monsters of River and Rock, My Life as Iron Maiden's Compulsive Angler, was published by Virgin Books. It's now available at bookstores and e-bookstores. Monsters of River and Rock includes chapters about Smith's sturgeon fishing on the Fraser River near Chilliwack and fly fishing near Kamloops. The Chilliwack trip came the day after Smith fell off stage at a 2008 concert in Vancouver. Smith discovered Alberta's Bow River from a fishing TV show, but the real discovery of his trip was a Thompson River lodge near Kamloops. The trip also included sightings of a bear and a moose, and Kim Mitchell tunes on the car stereo. Here are highlights of Smith's phone interview with the Breaker.News.
I don't know how we found out about it, because this was before the internet, but I heard of a place called Skitching Lodge up in Kamloops, in the interior there, and it was a lodge that catered just for fly fishermen, or trout fishermen, I should say, and I found myself there. We took a float plane, which was a great adventure to me, you know. Although I'd done a lot of traveling, I'd never been on a float plane. went out into the Canadian wilderness, and I just had the best couple of weeks of my life, just fishing every day. I learned to fly fish, got some proper equipment, and for the first, you know, saw my first bear, had my first encounter with a bear, which I describe in a book, which is pretty terrifying because we were on our own, you know, coming back from fishing this lake, and as usual, I took one too many last casts, and it was dark as we were going through the forest, and there we meet the bear, you know, and the rest of it's in the book. So yeah, that was a trip of a lifetime.
Yeah, you also saw a moose on Trans-Canada Highway, and some of the tunes you're listening to on the road included Kim Mitchell. You had a very Canadian adventure there.
Yeah, I did sort of fall in love with Canada then. I think it was just the claustrophobia of the tour. And when I went up there, it was just like big sky country. You know, I remember driving from Calgary towards the mountains out to Banff, and I just took a deep breath and just started to relax. And it was just the beginning of, like I say, a trip of a lifetime. I just loved the wide open spaces, the mountains, the snow-capped mountains. It was all just picture postcard, perfectly clean air, and just the lack of hustle and bustle. You know, the only reason people were hurrying was to go fishing, maybe, or, you know, do fun things. And we did see a moose, and we stopped on the Trans-Canada Highway. We were on our way to Wells Gray Park. We were just driving. We didn't have a destination. We were just driving. I'd rented a Camaro, which would, you know, turned out not to be the best vehicle for fishing, because we had actually went sliding off a logging road in this silly sports car, you know. But that was another story in the book. But this bloody moose came charging out of the forest onto the highway. And I'd never seen anything like it. It was like a horse with antlers. That was my first impression. It was as big as a horse. But I'd never seen a moose, so that was pretty incredible, yeah. And of course, Kim Mitchell. Absolutely brilliant, you know, very, kind of a bit underrated. I mean, I know he's very popular in Canada, but I had that album we did at Kimbo Logo, and we played that all the way through our trip. It was that was the theme music to our trip.
Now, you open up to the book with a quote from Billy Connolly, fishing is like meditation, only with a punchline. There couldn't be anything more different than performing on stage for 10,000 people in a hockey arena or 50,000 people in a stadium, and then the next day going out and being on a riverbank, being alone in nature. What draws you to fishing?
Well, I grew up with it. My dad was a keen fisherman. You know, we did what they call coarse fishing here, for rough fish that is not salmon and trout. You know, it's the fish that you find in the dirty industrial canals that were in the sort of the city of my youth where I grew up. Sometimes they were small or stunted, but, you know, I still could appreciate the tranquility of even sitting by the, you know, like I say, an industrial canal when I was a kid. I still loved it. And then we started going out in the country. And, you know, as I was writing the book, I realized how important the fishing was to me and how it has helped me over the years, you know, cope with, you know, the stress sometimes of being in a band and touring. Especially in the 80s, it was very, very hectic, and it really helped to balance me out. And when I'm by the water, I'm just thinking about fish, you know, what's going on under the water and trying to catch that big one, you know. You find you just forget everything else. I think that's what people love about it. And even if you're not fishing, you can sort of dream about it. As it starts off in the book, you know, I'm in a police escort on the way to a show in Mexico, and it's chaos. You know, there's bikes breaking out, there's accidents. We're going 100 miles an hour alongside the road, and I'm just shut my eyes, put my seat back, and dream. You know, I was fishing, just to like meditation, just to chill my mind out. So that's very important to me.
Now, you grew up in East London. I spent a lot of time there back in 2012 when I covered the London Olympics. They did a lot of urban renewal.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have they also done anything to improve the ecosystem and to stock the canals with fish, or at least make it a better ecosystem for the fish? Have they done any improvement there?
There has, you know, when I grew up in the 70s, the 60s, 70s, we had the River Lee, which you probably know, which ran down to, runs down to the part of the town where the Olympics were. It was so polluted you could smell it on a summer's day, and nothing, but nothing could live in it. You know, it was full of sewage and, you know, chemicals. It was an awful state. Now they've cleaned it up. Thank God they've cleaned it up, and they've changed the laws on pollution, and that goes for across the board in England. There are still some issues, but overall it's not as bad as it used to be, and it's a much better environment for fish, and certainly the fishing is a lot better than I remember as a kid. You know, and you know if chemicals do get dumped in rivers, the offenders are usually prosecuted. We have an organisation called the Angling Trust, which is where anglers have got together and formed this organisation to prosecute, you know, polluters and people who mess up the ecosystem. So that's a good thing. We do have, we have invasive species. We have American signal crayfish in a lot of the rivers, which are destroying, undercutting the banks. They're eating fish eggs, stuff like that. They've reintroduced otters back into the wild here, and they kind of go through the fish population pretty well. We're even talking about bringing back beavers. Mm. So who knows? Who knows? Yeah. It's looking pretty bleak for the fish. I know beavers don't eat fish, but they do a lot of... that they'd certainly change the environment of a river.
Now, Iron Maiden fans are looking forward to Live in Mexico City coming out November 20th, and you've got a European tour planned for next June, next summer. Fingers crossed that the pandemic gets solved by then, or at least there's a vaccine by then, so that you can please all the fans. How have you been spending your time during the pandemic? Have you been recording? Have you been fishing?
Been doing a lot of fishing, and had some great results, and the main thing is I'm enjoying it, and it gives me something to do. You know, even now we're locked down again, but they're still letting us go fishing because you're naturally self-isolating. I have been working on a musical project, which the first release will be out over Christmas. I'm not sure I'm allowed to talk about it yet, but that's something is definitely in the pipeline, so I'm excited about that as well.
That was Adrian Smith, guitarist with Iron Maiden and author of Monsters of River and Rock, My Life as Iron Maiden's Compulsive Angler. It is published by Virgin Books.
Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo Bar to a person or group that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Tony Waiters, the most important and most influential figure in Canadian soccer history. He passed away at age 83. The English national team goalkeeper came to Vancouver in 1977 to coach the North American Soccer League Vancouver Whitecaps. 2 years later, they were Soccer Bowl champs. He also coached Canada to its only World Cup appearance to date at Mexico 1986. Waiters was instrumental in making soccer the most played team sport in British Columbia, and he put Canada on the world soccer map. Waiters laid the foundation for a system that produced superstars like Christine Sinclair and Alfonso Davies. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo Bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of November 15th, 2020. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on November 15th in 2002, Hu Jintao became head of China's Communist Party, and exactly 10 years later, Xi Jinping took over as General Secretary, eventually becoming the most powerful Chinese leader since Mao Zedong. Now you know. Send me your feedback, send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.